Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with theater's biggest names. This episode is part two of our amazing interview with Alex Timbers. It continues from part one, obviously, that just dropped a few days ago. So if you haven't listened to that, I encourage you to stop, back it up, and listen to the previous episode. But before you do, please visit us online at ttp.fm. Show your support via ttp.fm/Patreon to get advance notice of these interviews so you can submit your questions and many, many other opportunities to help us out and get our episodes transcribed and lots of things that we're trying to do with the contributions that we get. So with that said, please enjoy part two of this episode with Alex Timbers.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here you go, 1, 2, 3.
You used a term earlier that called the emotional on-ramp, but mm-hmm. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. Because I was as you were describing the issues, I was thinking like, how early can you relate to the characters, and I guess how much do you sympathize with them? And calling it an emotional on-ramp, is that something you use a lot?
No, I think it's a term. First time used it as on the show.
Heard it here first. Emotional on-ramp exclusive. I really like that, because you come on stage, you want someone, I guess, yeah, there's intention. The characters have the intention. You want the audience to relate a certain way at certain times. And so how do you convey that? It's costumes, it's lighting, it's the acting itself, it's a song. Yeah, there's so much that you have to play with.
Yeah.
So I don't envy the need to go back and like address negative reviews, I guess.
Yeah.
Even if they were all positive, would you still go and tweak it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think, you listen to the thing about previews that's so wonderful is, you know, every audience is seeing a performance that's only happening once, right? Mm-hmm. Because the day before you changed a bunch of stuff. The next day, based on their reactions, you're going to change a bunch of stuff. So they're seeing like version, 300 of this show, and that will never be repeated again. And so, I love that time. You know, Here Lies Love, we did three workshops. Then we went to Mass MoCA in Massachusetts to do a lab of that. Then we came to New York and did a production, then we did another production. That iterative process of getting to go back and layer new things and strip mm-hmm. away things and understand what the audience is responding to and how you can make their emotional response greater, I think it's really thrilling. And that's the most fun part, I think, about being a director and a storyteller in theater.
Have you found that the there's our generation, and it's like, I'll call myself 40 now, the 40 and up,
uh-huh.
that have seen the movie and love the movie that come in and have a different reaction to the younger kids now, the 20s and late teens or whatnot, who are coming for the first time and don't know the story until they see it on Broadway. Is there a different reaction, like stage door reaction or social media reaction between the two? Or is it all kind of just like, this is a great story?
You know, it's interesting because the audience, particularly this summer, I think as they've gotten to like teenagers and stuff, have really gotten into the show. And I don't know if they knew the movie that mm-hmm. well. But I think what one of the things that makes that movie an evergreen is beyond the sort of Bertonian kind of visual style, which is so unique. It's the story of outsiders, mm-hmm. you know? And I think people see themselves in those characters. People see themselves in Lydia and Beetlejuice and the Maitlands. And so that's been really fun. And you see it more and more like at the theater where you have like people dressing up as the characters.
Really?
Yeah. And originally it's, maybe this is interesting that, you know, originally it was people, you know, our age that were dressing up like Beetlejuice coming to the theater, dressing up like a teen goth. But now it's actual teenagers doing that. And so, I think that's, I think that's really cool and great.
That's so much fun. Yeah, the props, the sandworms, the costumes. Do you have a favorite prop or a favorite costume? I love the shrunken head guy.
Oh, yeah.
From the Netherworld.
Yeah, totally.
Totally cool. If you were going to take one thing home with you, what would you want to take out of the show?
Oh, that's amazing. I love the sandworm, I have to say. It's just, it's cool to see a puppet of that scale and that has that kind of life mm-hmm. to it. Because it's, you know, its jaws open and it birds another sandworm inside it and smoke comes out and its bloodshot eyes light up. It's just... I think Michael Curry really sort of did such an amazing job with that one. And there's, that sandworm comes in two parts. There's the head and then yeah. there's the tail from the other side of the stage,
yeah.
which is an inflatable. And it's really cool.
I love all the props in there. Do you go back to see the show a lot? And how often do you get to go back and see it?
I see the show probably every... 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
I'll go back if a understudy is on sometimes, and because I'm excited to cheer them on, and then just generally go back for show maintenance. At that point, you know, the show really is the stage manager's show and the actor's show, and so I also just try. I don't want to be too much in anyone's hair, and overstay my welcome.
I don't know. I feel like if it was like my baby that I've been working on for 9 years, I would go back and be like, this little thing is just not quite right. Can we go back? Do you give notes when you go back?
So yeah, I'll give notes, but I try not to, but just sort of more general notes. When I did Blay Blay, Andrew Jackson, it was my first experience on Broadway, and I wrote that show with Michael Friedman. And so it felt very much like, you know, my baby in the way you're talking about, that kind of idea. And I went back too frequently and I learned my lesson. I think I drove the actors probably crazy. You know, they were very generous and kind and, you know, but so I just learned on that show, you know, you've got to give space. It's, you know, the performances are growing. The show evolves and, you know, that's an exciting part of the process of doing theater. And so, that's the balance, you know, that I hope I've found in a little more maturity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're also, I'm going to move on to TV and film a little bit, co-creator of the Amazon series Mozart in the Jungle. It sounds like when you list bios like this, and I'm talking to you and you're sitting here and just a real person, like you've directed these multi-million dollar productions and these great things, and like you're just co-creating the show that now the world can go watch. How does this happen? I mean, how easy is it to just go co-create a show and get it on Amazon?
I got approached by Jason Schwartzman and Roman Coppola, who are just wonderful guys, and they had the rights to this book, and they were interested, I think, in having someone kind of who is in the kind of performing arts community collaborate with them. In the pilot stage, a amazing filmmaker named Paul Weitz came on, who's like one of the kindest human beings, in addition to being one of the most talented. And they sort of, you know, and then the show was off and running. I think one of the things that was really exciting about that was just seeing how a whole new world works. And I loved, I'm sure you do too, as a sort of fan of shows that shoot in New York, like seeing all these sort of theater titans. Mm-hmm. You know, I love watching Succession. That's one of my favorite shows. And watching just, you know, like all these amazing...
Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, yeah, theater actors popping up left and right. It's just, it's so sort of gratifying and exciting and feels a little like... Where's Waldo in a fun way, you know?
Because you hang out with a lot of them personally, yeah. Oh, Hello. One of my favorite shows I've seen.
One of my favorite shows ever to have worked on.
Yeah. John Mulaney and Nick Kroll. You're friends with John through the comedy scene, I guess, right?
The way I got involved with that show was, it all comes back to Playboy Andrew Jackson, all these things we're talking about. After that show, and I think after the Pee Wee Herman show, I got a call about having a coffee with Nick Kroll. And so this was maybe 2010, 2011. And we had this coffee. He was wonderful. He's a wonderful guy. And it was so fun. And that was sort of it, because we existed in a different world. Mm-hmm. And then in 2015, I remember this because I was putting up a production of Rocky the Musical in Stuttgart, Germany, and had the flu. And I got this email from Nick saying, "Hey, do you remember me? I have this show.
Do you remember me?
I'm working with this guy, John Mulaney, and we're doing this thing down at Cherry Lane. It happens like in 3 weeks. There's no, like, it doesn't exist quite yet. You know, could we collaborate on it?" And of course, you know, in those moments, you just say, "Oh my God, well, I don't even really know what," I wasn't so familiar with Gil and George, the characters, but I was like, working with these guys, absolutely. And it was this sort of heavenly experience. This is sort of extraordinary. I think the theater makers will really think this is as amazing as I do. They were teching the show at Cherry Lane during the day and night, and then at midnight going to the UCB and performing the show, like, which was at that point 2 hours long, and performing it for a live audience, and trying out jokes and cutting jokes, and the next day coming into tech and saying, "Hey, we're going to do this again." So that's one thing that's extraordinary about them. Two, we were performing on Colin Quinn's set. So we were like, there's an entrance up right, there's an entrance down left, and we started tech. We never worked together before, and we were like, "Hey, top of show, do you want to enter up left or down right?" And they sort of looked, and they were like, "Let's do up left." And that's really how we blocked the show. And we went through it once, and I was so nervous. I was like, "Oh my God, are they going to remember any of this blocking? They've only done it once during tech." And they remembered it all. I mean, they are like, not only such brilliant comedians, but they are... you know, they know exactly where they want to be. And, mm-hmm. and it was incredible. And the lighting designer was also like, "I've never experienced something like this before." All night, like, he's like, "I don't need to adjust anything."
the whole set there, it's like they pulled in props from old shows. Is that real? Is there actually a warehouse somewhere that has all these iconic props from big shows?
No, well, so it was kind of a riff on this, because the Colin Quinn set, we were like on someone else's set. So the Broadway set, which was done by Scott Pass, which was so beautiful, which was like these different sets from different other shows cobbled together, was sort of a riff on a riff in that way. None of the sets from like the August Wilson play or Steel Magnolias were real sets. But I do think that some of there was this rack of gramophones from I Am My Own Wife, and we had the same props designer as I Am My Own Wife, and we were in the same building as I Am My Own Wife. So I think some of those gramophones might have been the gramophones. There
really?
You go.
Really?
Fun fact.
And then they got filmed and put on HBO, as did Pee Wee Herman show, right?
Pee Wee Herman got filmed. Yeah, yeah. I think Oh Hello's on Netflix.
Oh yeah, Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so amazing when you know, you make something, it's ephemeral, and then someone captures it. It's really awesome to have that.
Is that where you like theater to head? Like, to have, after it's done on Broadway, it gets captured and released wider, or do you prefer it to kind of be more localized and live?
Here's what I love about about theater. Like the first show that got me really excited about theater was Tommy. And that was, you know, this, it felt like the first show I'd ever seen where the boundaries between like pop music, popular culture, music, video, visuals, all that felt bridged with this sort of theater world. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the stuff that I love sort of exists in those worlds where the sort of area where two worlds meet. And one of those is the comedy world and theater world. And I think you look at Pee Wee or you look at Oh Hello, and there's something really sort of exciting and unique when you have the live comedy event meets a play. And so something like that, it feels like just naturally there'd be, particularly with those performers, Paul Rubens, John Mulaney, Nick Kroll, there's an appetite beyond, you know, the type, you know, the number of people that can fit into a limited run. I think to see something like that, I think it's really exciting to have people be able to access that.
There are so many things in life that stress me out. You know what shouldn't stress me out? Eating. So we can all eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options for all dietary needs. And you can discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and even some drinks to help you stay fueled up. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Say that five times fast. Earth Month Eats. Earth Month Eats. Just remember, these no fuss, no mess meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. So just simply heat and eat the good stuff. Head to factormeals.com/TTP50 and use code TTP50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code TTP50 at factormeals.com/TTP50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals. Great
expectations. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Is there something lost, do you think? Like when I watch a comedy on TV that I've seen live, I always feel like it's never as good. I don't connect, because I can pause it. I can go to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Someone can come in and distract me.
Well, it's definitely different. You know, the communal experience of being in a space with, you know, like seeing Oh Hello with 900 other people, it's thrilling. But I guess, you know, next to not having anything,
true.
Totally, it's great. You know, it was really a fun experience was working on the John Mulaney's Radio City show, because in that instance, we're simultaneously building a show for that live audience at Radio City, but also filming it for Netflix. So you're thinking about it from both, you're thinking about it for the camera and for the audience in the theater at the same time. And that was really exciting, because there you're trying to make it, you know, from the birthing of it, equally great for both audiences.
Oh yeah. So you know, ahead of time, you're planning for it specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you still work with John a lot now?
He's a friend, and you know, I love to work with him again. He's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, such a fun guy. Everything he does, I love. I actually watched the Netflix special, so
yeah,
it was very funny.
Oh, good.
Okay, cool. So it seems like you've always got a lot of stuff happening simultaneously. How do you actually decide what to wake up and work on in a given day?
That's a great question. I mean, because musicals, which are the thing I primarily work on, are take so long to sort of come to production, and you know, some never see the light of day. You don't really get to plan your life as much as one might think. You don't get to say, okay, this year I'm doing Brigadoon, next year I'm doing a new musical by so-and-so. And so a lot of it's governed by sort of everyone else's schedules. You know, when is everyone available to do the workshop for XYZ? And so then you're sort of gearing up for that. I think the thing that's the plate spinning aspect of it is really those shows that are in deeper development where you're sort of trying to like kind of always push them along a little bit. Like mm-hmm. every week, how can I help that show go to the next level? Is that, you know, by doing a piece of development, is it doing a writer meeting? Is it talking to a designer and going through sort of looking at renderings mm-hmm. and those that don't have a like sort of deadline that's looming are the ones I think that are the ones that are always the bigger sort of challenge. And then those shows, you know, then when Beetlejuice happens, you know, when suddenly at a certain point, a show gains a kind of critical mass momentum and then suddenly it's happening, you feel a real sense of pride and victory when that thing that for like 4 or 5 years was sort of felt like, is this happening? Is it not happening? Is suddenly like you're in rehearsal for it. It's a thrilling feeling. Yeah.
Hmm. And you said you feel a victory, of course, when it makes it. Do you take it personally if something doesn't?
If something doesn't reach production? Yeah. I mean, well, like, you know, they're like your children. You root for all of them and you want them all to succeed. And you definitely, you know, particularly for the writers, you want people's work to get their due chance to be seen and received and hopefully for the writers to be celebrated in mm-hmm. the way that they you know, they do. I love the writers I get to work with. I feel very lucky and I love the collaborative process. There's so many other mediums where you don't collaborate. Theater, particularly musical theater, is very, very, very collaborative in it. And that's one of the things that I just adore about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I could, I was going to say, I don't know if I could take the rejection. And then I was thinking, well, is it rejection? Is it not rejection? But I guess it is sort of, you know, the production side of rejection. Actors deal with rejection every day with auditions and
sure.
and whatnot. But I guess, yeah, the production side, I guess you could have an idea that doesn't get picked up, or you have a workshop that you're like, oh, that's just not working. Let's cut that. Is that so? You have your own rejection to deal with. Does that hurt at all? Is I mean, like I said, is it actual a personal thing, or are you just like, it's just part of the business, shrug it off?
Oh no, everything's personal. I mean, it's creative, it's artistic, so everything is. But I don't know. I think as I'm getting older, I do understand that sometimes you know, shows that I'm excited about that no one else is excited about, that maybe that's a good indication. maybe they're misguided. I think that, I don't know that I have a great articulate answer for that. I apologize. That's all I got, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good place to wrap up here. So at the end of the podcast, I ask everyone 3 standard questions.
Please.
The first one is, what motivates you?
Motivates me. I think it's the artist I get to work with, you know, just thinking about that actor I get to collaborate with today. Oh, that designer I get to see what they're working on. That's the stuff that inspires me and gets me excited about every project.
Okay, so the second question is, what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
I think, you know, the thing that was really profound for me was the not waiting for opportunities, like creating your own opportunities. I remember hearing this, I was an intern at a theater company right out of college, and I remember hearing this adage that you have to have gray hair to direct. And I kept reading about, you know, read Time Out, and I was reading about all these productions, and I was like, oh gosh, everyone's like my age now, or in their 50s or 60s that's directing these shows. And so I realized that no one was going to hire me to direct Tennessee Williams or Thornton Wilder or something like that. And I had to go make my own theater. So I created my own theater company really as a vehicle to get hired to direct things. So I think that's important, is to, you know, whatever part of the theater industry you're in, to take as much agency as you can, to not rely on others to pursue your art as much as you can.
Create your own art. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then final question, if you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
Oh, gosh. I love Spring Awakening. I'd love to see Spring Awakening over and over again. I think that show's great.
Oh, that's wonderful. Good answer. Okay, so of course, visit Beetlejuice online, beetlejuicebroadway.com, and you can connect with Alex on Instagram at AlexTimbers. You can get more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com or thetheaterpodcast.com/Patreon to show your support. Theater_podcast on Instagram and Twitter, facebook.com/officialtheaterpodcast. Please rate, leave a review. Produced by Jillian Hockman, edited by Matthew Hendershot, and thank you to Jukebox the Ghost for the intro and outro music, and then Alex Timbers, thank you,
for
this wonderful conversation.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.